So welcome to another episode of the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles Retrospective. I'm Wesley, and I'm joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Scott Holmes, who is beaming, absolutely glowing, not because he's with child, but equally as proud because he just saw the Mario Brothers movie. And if you know anything about Spencer, he loves the original, well, not, I guess you could say the original 1993 Mario Brothers
movie. Yeah, there technically is actually an original Mario Brothers movie from like 86. It's an anime one from Japan. It's pretty interesting. So there's technically three Mario Brothers movies in total. But as far as the West is concerned, the original Mario Brothers movie, the 93 one, top 10 favorite movies of all time, you know, and I say that like with all the love that can be for it. But this new Mario Brothers movie, it's all around perfect. I thought they were going to drop the ball at some point somewhere in there because it was Illumination, and I felt like it was just bound to happen, and they made Nintendo proud. I feel they stuck to the whole thing the whole way through, and it was awesome.
It looks good. I'm excited to see it. I'm gonna take my son to see it, and we're getting into the thick of the movie season. We've got a lot of cool stuff coming up over the course of the summer, and of course, we're very very excited for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, leading up to Indiana June, which is why we're doing all this. Indiana Jones retrospective stuff. People are enjoying this. The episodes I put out have been doing really well. So I want to thank everybody for that. And we got a lot more to come, so join us. I also always go to Young Indy Restored on YouTube if you want to watch what we're watching and the order we're watching. And it's got a little hairy lately in terms of, you know, chronological stuff. Not at the fault of, the people putting that stuff together, but it's, you know, it's there's some international delays and differences between the show and then the Young Indiana Jones Adventures, which was the movies. So it would take some time to figure all that stuff out, but we've pretty much got it worked.
Yeah, because I think technically after the episodes we do today, it will all go back to a normal schedule. I think these are just the couple that were broken up, the Blues ones and then the New York ones, which we're watching right now, are the only ones that were broken up for some weird reason in an international release. And for some other reason, they took out Harrison Ford.
Yeah, that's just blasphemous. I don't know. You know what? Sometimes you're just like, oh, things are going on in America, and you're like, wow, this, you know, makes you kind of feel bummed. But then you're like, no, America got here. It's Harrison fucking Ford.
Yeah.
And I'm proud. I just want to say I'm proud to be American at that moment.
Exactly.
I realize. Yeah. So I don't know what's going on with that. That was weird how they did that. But these were basically two of the last five episodes. Of the last five episodes, two of them were actually made into movies in the United States. Because I'm pretty sure this Scandal of 1920 was even a movie on TV. Even before George re-edited them, it felt like this one was, you know, a movie. But in Europe, I'm assuming there's still the old indie stuff. And yes, but yeah, you know, we'll have fun watching them this way. It's pretty much more in line with what people watched in the early 90s, 92, 93. So I'm pretty pleased with that.
Yeah, as I said, the only thing that's different is they just split them up in the versions we watched, which kind of makes them easier to watch anyways. You know, you get part one, part two, like it's, you know, old school Batman 66. But gosh, going into these ones here, I really did enjoy these ones, especially like the New York ones, because I don't know, the old indie scene that we start off with in the New York one is definitely going for like one of the high-end old indie scenes where old Indy shows up to New York and he gets in this cab and there's this lady driving it. And this lady's going on is like, you know, the biggest man hater known to mankind, like feminist power. And I just love how Indy goes like, well, we got some time, so let me tell you about the first time I came to New York and I was a player.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me relate to your feminism by telling you how I had mad hoes. Like, just,
yeah. Indy was literally, you know, he was doing three ladies at once.
He was, man. I titled this on our end. I'll share it on YouTube, and I titled this one Indiana Jones, Sex in the City. Because that's pretty much what the episode was.
There was. It's just like all I picture is, once again, as usual, Indy's just for 45 minutes just telling this lady, like, in here about the three ladies that he was going after. He's like, well, I couldn't choose between them, so I just said, why not have all of them?
It's like a Neapolitan. I had a blonde, a brunette, a redhead. He did. They even did that. They even did that. That was the audacity of this episode. It's like, we're going to give Indy three. We're going to give him a blonde, brunette, and a redhead. That's what they did. And he's bouncing around. And they're just... So even in episodes prior to these, okay, so they've alluded to how much of a chick magnet Indy is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there was the previous episodes where he had the girlfriend whose name I can't even remember now.
Elizabeth Hurley was also in the early yeah, one.
He had Elizabeth Hurley, but he would like take his roommate to the like to these social functions, and it kind of felt very much like George McFly, Lorraine Baines, and he's trying to get them together, and then she's like, you know, all falling in love with him. It felt like that. So he's just, you know, whimsically just bounces into relationships because he's indie. And this one, it all comes to a head.
Yeah, exactly. You know, well, it starts off and young Indy's on this train and he's going to New York and whatnot, leaving Chicago. Mm-hmm. And he meets a lady on board here who wants to, is an aspiring actress for the Broadway and so on like that. And in this kind of moment, they, you know, they have a scene and they kind of, you know, get flirtatious, sort of. And then Indy's like, we said, when I get to New York, I know everything around. I'll come by. I'll pick you up. I'll show you, you know. And then literally like half an hour later, Indy's like finds himself at some artsy, you know, almost like early beatnik like party and so mm-hmm. on. Totally blows this lady off.
Very bohemian. Yeah.
There were a bunch of poets in there and artists. And on the wall, there's just like musicians and like that wavy kind of artwork stuff going on. You know, and then Indy's just up, you know, hanging off this, like, in a sense, artsy kind of, you know, 1910s hippie chick, you know, talking about stuff till like noon, yeah. Drinking and partying, so that forgetting that he's supposed to meet the actress lady now.
Yeah. So, yeah, he falls in love with kind of on the train. They don't like each other at first, and they clearly just fall head over heels for each other. This is the one that he was like really interested in the most, I feel like.
Yeah.
And, you know, perfect indie kind of girl. And aspiring dreamer, you know, country mouse goes to the city. And then, yeah, you got Anne Heche plays the bohemian kind of poet girl, which rest in peace, Anne Heche. She was good in this.
I know. I mean, and sadly, whenever I think of Anne Heche, I just think of that Kevin Smith Anne Heche butthole song that he would always do on Hollywood Babylon.
Okay. I understand your references, but this one I don't understand.
Well, Kevin Smith was so obsessed with, in the Psycho remake, he's like, okay, the dude who did Good Will Hunting did it shot for shot of, like, mm-hmm. you know, the exact same movie, but just yeah. in color. That was his whole thing. He's like, mm-hmm. but for some reason, when Anne Heche falls over in, like, the shower scene, you see her butthole. And he just always brings it up. So that's what whenever I think of her, that's what I think of is... And there's, as I said, there's literally a tune that would go on Hollywood Babylon for whenever, like, the reference was brought up.
Gosh.
So of course, when young Indy, that was the first thing I was thinking of too. I was just like, well, first, there we go.
Rest in peace, Anne Heche. Is all I like exactly. Yeah, rest in peace. We're you know, it's a somber moment. We'll just reflect for a moment. She was great in this. Yeah. She was, I think, the most stereotypical in terms of what you would go for. You know, they always had her as a blonde and everything. She was looking really good as a brunette, like in this one. Mm-hmm. She was very much, it reminded me of Casino Royale. She was very much like the Money Penny.
Vespa? Oh, like Money Penny?
Vesper. Well, Vesper, yeah. But they teased that she was going to be Money Penny for a minute, but they never followed through with that. But yes, she's definitely like Vesper in this, kind of a little bit. It kind of reminded me of that, but more bohemian and kind of like, you know, artsy. She's at the Algonquin Round Table with all these other poets and writers and critics and different stuff like that. So he's got his foot in there. He's with the actress girl. And then he meets this like just socialite lady, which does not seem like the indie type.
Now, was she a silent movie star? Because I felt like that's what it said she sort of was at first, but then it never ever came back around to it. So then I'd like, as the both these episodes are going on, I'm like, was she an actress, or was she just like literally like the Paris Hilton of 1910 and, you know, didn't really have any proper connection to anything?
I'm going to lean into that. So here's what we'll do real quick. We're going to Google something, like all the other podcasts do these days. They're just like, hey, Jamie, pull that up.
Yeah, you know, because everybody's got their slave boy in the corner who just looks things up for them.
Yeah, except I'm the slave boy and we're both the slave boys. Because we ain't got no producers. Okay, let me just make sure I'm spelling this right. Gloria, okay, I did spell it wrong.
Oh, are you thinking if she's somebody like actually like an actual character too? Because sometimes that always throws me off. I always wonder if they're, is that an actual historical character or is that just for the episode?
This one was loaded with them, but they weren't like very super big ones. They're ones I've heard of, but I didn't know as well. I mean, I can't know everything about history, neither can you.
No.
We know a lot. I don't mean that sound cocky, but we retain useless information, like, you know, we're accessible of that. Mm-hmm. You know, Surge pencils from 1993. That's what we are.
Gotta have those. I know somewhere.
Gloria Schuyler, I'm gonna assume I'm saying that right, was a young socialite who was met and courted by Indiana Jones and Heels.
That was a history textbook. Like, wait, what? This whole time in India, what was this? Is this weird thing that Indiana Jones actually was a real historical figure, and just for some reason, like, it's been kind of like written out of history.
Yeah,
this stuff is true.
Yeah, she's not anybody. She's just a socialite. She is the Paris Hilton of whatever. Because what I was more interested in, and this sounds like terrible, but I was more interested in, okay, if she's a socialite, she's wealthy. Daddy obviously has money because he later bankrolls this play that Indy's working on. Long story, we'll get there. I was like, maybe he's like a thing. Maybe he's like a Rockefeller or, one of these people that, you know, a Carnegie or something. Maybe he's related, you know, past oil baron or whatever that was important. So I was thinking that she might have been a famous socialite, but that's clearly what she was. She was just this, you know, and they're on like the wealthy parts of New York, going to all these up high end parties. And the thing is with these ladies is, with the exception of the Bohemian girl, like, Indy has nothing to offer.
No.
At this point, he's not the world famous archaeologist. He's still like, you know, whatever. He's just really good looking. That's really all he has to offer.
He's literally, it's like Urban Cowboy is what it is. It's
yeah.
All he's got to offer is his good looks and just being the boy toy for all these girls.
Yeah, that's it. And like, they're fawning over him. And like, they're like, not just like in love with him, and not, they don't, obviously, this is like ABC television, 1993. This isn't, you know, and obviously a Netflix special today. So they don't show that anything super intimate is going on. Andy's boinking all three of these ladies.
Yeah. Like, maybe, like, yeah, he literally switches off. He like looks at his watch. He's like, oh, it's been an hour.
Yeah. It's like, this pill lasts four. So I got time. I got an hour to spare.
Got it from the snake oil salesman, you know, he came in the town of his car.
Yeah,
you said drink this blue drink.
Yeah, drink this blue drink and you'll be all right. It's funny because this episode, I mean, it's a two-parter. I feel like this could have been resolved in one. I really feel like this was, you know, a lot.
But it works. It works. I felt like these two-parters, like, I was really like into this. Like, I'm like, it's gonna turn out bad for Indy, but I just want to see how this goes.
Yeah, you knew it was going to turn out bad. And it was definitely some of the most cohesive, just well-produced stuff that we've seen in the series, just in terms of the flow, the story, you know, the writing, the acting. Well, the acting was some of the best in this one, because all three of the girls are really good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got a lot of meat to it. So basically, Indy, what is going on? So he moves to New York. He's, you know, kind of, even Sidney Bechet has went there, so he's still with that jazz group, kind of.
Yeah,
I thought there was going to be a lot of that going on in this one.
They disappear like 10 minutes into it.
Yeah, I did see a comment on the YouTube stuff, because that's where we're watching it. Somebody says, I disagree with this to an extent, but it was funny. They're like, oh, shit, you know, and you see those jazz musicians, this episode's going to suck. I disagree with that.
Yeah, because I kind of like all those episodes so far. They're like the total like indie side story stuff, but it's like I really actually enjoy these ones.
I think for people, they're like, where's the archaeology? Where the fuck is it? And that's not what this is. It's, you know, it's just there's none of that right now. There's no. Some of the other ones have had adventure, like mystery, like we said, Hardy Boys kind of stuff in the last couple episodes we watched. And this one's just really just Indy living his life and just collecting mad hoes along the way. And
you know what? It's like Dragon Ball Z. There's the people that they just want the pure fighting in it and so on like that. But what I really enjoy is I love the episodes that are like such the side stories, like the one where Goku and Piccolo for some reason have to get driver's licenses. Like that's the kind of stuff that like I gravitate to. And I go, man, that's a good episode right there. And that's what I feel these Indiana Jones ones sort of are. It's like, he's not doing archaeology and everything like this, but we're going to figure out what's going to happen to Indy when he tries to bang three women at once. And you know, is it gonna be like the Scott Pilgrim the video game where you can get the super happy ending where Scott Pilgrim and like it literally ends and it cuts and goes like, and Scott Pilgrim didn't have to choose between the girls, he got all three of them and he was the happiest man ever. Cuts the credits.
And Indiana Jones moves to Utah and becomes a polygamist.
It becomes the happiest man ever. The end.
Yeah. It's
it'll be like that.
So he's working on this play, and so you got like some famous people there, like George Gershwin, who was like his famous playwright and all that stuff. And you know, I think some of the other people were at the Algonquin Round Table were supposed to be a big deal, like that she was with. And I honestly did not have time to look up everybody. I'm sure there were some names I would have recognized, but some of the critics and the other poets that she was talking to, I can't wait for Hemingway to show up.
Because
it felt like a place where he would just even have a brief cameo, which I did see that he's coming up in an episode. I was expecting him, but yeah, there was a lot of people in this that were kind of like, especially in the New York Times, you know, a New York, you know, 1920s era that were kind of popular. So it was hard to kind of keep track of all that. But Indy ends up getting a job. He's looking for a job, he works at this, for this play, and it's like, you know, very ambitious and it's stressful. There's a lot going on and Indy's just kind of getting yelled at and told what to do. And so he's like really super stressed. He's like, how am I going to relieve all this stress? And I'm just going to get three women on top of it.
Which only puts him into more stress as it kind of goes on, because he's taking on like all these jobs at the play. And the kind of cool thing in this one I do like is it just gives you a cool behind the scenes of like that 1910s kind of musical theater, Broadway, which almost is like kind of a very fun era of that. You're like, you could see where that would be a very interesting time period to be involved in musicals and so on right then, you know, and this shows a lot in these two episodes all through there and all like the cool, some tricks behind the scenes and all the fun stuff in there. It's almost like a making of kind of like a Broadway show then, but just Indy happens to be involved in it. And I think that's all the other thing I thought that was really fun in it is, you know, Indy works his way up through all these jobs and so on like that. And that's kind of his thing.
Yeah, that's what these episodes are. Like, you have the Indy story and you have what's going on with his life and you have, you know, all that stuff. But really what it is a look into different eras in American history and different art forms or different political situations or, you know, historical moments, cultural important moments. And then Indy Force Gumps his way into those situations. And so that's like, it's like a backstory, but really that's what the story's about is that it's not about Indy as much as the other stuff, but Indy, you know, takes it over, which is fine, but it's an excuse to dive into historical moments, historical figures, and all that stuff. So, and then Andy dives into all the ladies.
He does.
Yeah.
You know, it's so much so that you're like, it's like, is he going to add more to his list? You know what I mean? You okay. know?
Well, we're just going to, I'm just going to say it. I have to know. So you're Andy.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pick one. And I guess you could pick one based off of Andy, not off yourself, because that's going to get you in trouble.
Yeah.
But Andy, I think he worked better with the Anne Heche character.
I agree there too. I thought that the whole time, like when he's trying to make his decisions. So I mean, I'll say this: you could dump the silent movie or whatever the heck she is, the Paris Hilton like character.
She's the worst.
Yeah, you get that lady out of there. That was one. Yeah. That was just a one night mistake that Indy just couldn't seem to like fix. I felt
she was attractive, but
yeah, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But like she had like the personality. No. I felt like yeah. You know, and the actress lady close enough too, because she also had a lot kind of like going for her there. But I really felt like, I don't know, I felt like one, you know, Anne Heche, everything. She took Indy in. He literally is living there. She's making him dinner, all kinds of stuff like that. He's got everything taken care of for him right there. You know, she takes him out to do like slam poetry and whatnot. And she's got a job of like, you know, the critics, you know what I mean? So she's like, yeah. You know, the Leonard Maltin of 1910.
Yeah, she is. She's definitely the most chill one, the coolest one. She had even if she burnt that one dinner, she had like the best food. I thought that was one of the most clever gags of the whole thing was when Indy was starving and had to leave. So he goes on the first date and she like force feeds him like three chili dogs. She goes, it's my treat, because he ends up getting this girl apart, like the country mouse girl. She disappears for a long time. They were supposed to have a rendezvous. He misses it because he bangs in Heche. So he misses that. And he's like, yeah, I really liked her though. And then she kind of shows back up. Because she's an actress, she auditions for this play and gets a small part. So then she kind of shows back up into the fold. So he has one moment where he meets her and she's like, thank you for getting me the part. Let me treat you to lunch. So I could eat about two chili dogs right now. She goes, I'm going to give you three. So then he eats three. And then he goes to the Bohemian girl's house and she burns dinner. He's late and she's a little pissed off, but she's like, I'm still going to feed you. So she's like giving him kisses, loving all over him, feed them like, oh, the steak sucks. So I made you pasta. So then he goes eat the pasta. And then he goes to the socialite's house and she's like, he's like sick. And she's like literally force feeding him oysters.
And they're sitting at like the Citizen Kane like table where they're like super far apart from each other.
I was thinking of Batman 89 is what I was
thinking. Yeah, no, it's like that too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was they really played that well in Batman 89. Like, do you like your soup? That was one of my favorite gags in that movie. But yeah, it's, you know, socialite. Then she brings up that flambe thing. Like, I think like it was whatever it was on fire.
And presumably
eat that too. So he's, you know, just all the indulgences of the seven deadly sins. He's got like a lot of them covered. He's lying.
Yep.
Yeah. You know,
well, Indy's got the classic, he can't say no thing. He's anybody who's got an offer, he's just got to say, yeah, he's a yes man.
With those ladies, he was, yeah, because he liked all of them.
Yeah,
socialite would be the one. I think if Indy was choosing, she'd go first. He couldn't get. I think he wanted to get rid of her, but he couldn't because her daddy ends up bankrolling the play.
Yeah,
saving that play. So really, the other two were the two he just couldn't get rid of, and he literally couldn't get rid of her because he had to keep up appearances, but I think she would have been the one to get kicked to the curb.
Yeah. Well, cause it's also that thing. It's like, do you want money or do you want sort of like house and, you know, food, or do you just want somebody who's just an up and comer fun personality? Like that was like his like three choices.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Anne Heche character was most like the Elizabeth Hurley character and some of the other ones that he's met that were like, you know, had personality and stuff like that. So yeah, it was a crazy episode. It gets really stressful, really frantic.
Mm-hmm. Especially as it goes on. And I want to bring this up because we kind of have two different variations of old Indy in between, because yes, it's in a two-parter. I love how the first part, when part one ends and it cuts back to old Indy, and he, after he's telling this feminist lady, which ironically, I remember Laura was watching a movie like literally the next day, and I was like, dude, that's the feminist lady from the Indiana Jones thing. I can't remember what the hell movie it was, but I was like, there she is, it's the cab driver lady. You know, none of this stuff recognizing to her, but I'm like, dude, there she is. But I love how Indy's like, yeah, so that was how I was banging three chicks at once, you know, and so on. And then he gets out and he's like, I don't even want to tip you too. See you later, bitch. It's just like, I don't have like the connection there. It's like, yeah, she's like, oh, she's like, see, dirty men, see, they're all the same, just like that Indiana Jones guy. Doesn't even tip.
Yeah. He said, what's the fare at? She goes, $37. He says, I'm out.
Yeah, he just leaves. Doesn't pay, doesn't tip, nothing. Like,
it's so funny.
That's what made me laugh so hard. I was just like that's like the most dickish old indie I think on the entire thing so far.
Yeah, I think at the end of when we get through with all this, like towards the end, we're gonna have to rank our favorite old indie moments because they're just terrible, but they're good. Except for the Petrograd one.
Yeah,
that one was fucking great.
Yeah.
But the rest of them have been pretty rough, but we look forward to them so much.
That's the thing, is like they're so goofy that like that's what makes them almost more exciting than almost anything else.
Yeah. It's just so there was the feminist lady, and then later on he's talking to a critic. That one was definitely one of the bottom tier ones, where this critic's like, I've been a critic for 30 years and I know what I'm doing, because he's basically already wrote his review of this play before he's seen it. And Indy's, you know, they're getting ready to watch a play. He's sitting beside this guy, and he's like, "You're a punk bitch for doing that." And then at the end of it, he's like, "Hey, you're right. That is kind of sucky of me. I shouldn't do it that way." And he's like, "Yes, damn right." And then that's pretty much how it ends. It's like, it was pretty atrocious.
Well, it's like, what it really reminded me of was when I saw that part, I'm like, oh, this is just George writing, like, let me tell you what I think about critics. I felt like that was 100% George right there, because he's like, you didn't see all the hard work and the labor that these damn kids had to go through and all this kind of stuff in there. Like, you know what? Why don't you give them a chance? I'm like, dude, that is 100% George just being like, you know who I hate is the critics.
Yeah. It is. It's still prequels, George. So he didn't hate him as much yet. He hated him way more in about 6 years.
But even still, the critics were still always kind of against George, I think, from the beginning. Like THX got hit real hard. American Graffiti even did by certain ones. Like, you know, because I think there was a critic that. This is the one. It's like, it was like the right off the bat, he's like, it was a San Francisco Chronicle just said American Graffiti was terrible and did not represent anything of that very well. And he's like, dude, that I shot it at, and pretty much like the one place I needed for it to be, you know, critically well received, and like they were the first ones to hate on it.
Yeah, it did get nominated for Best Picture though.
Oh, in the long run, yeah. But I mean, all it takes is a couple bad critics, you know, and that can sometimes outweigh it. So I felt that was totally George there, really just like getting his like two cents in on the subject.
Well, George was very, I've been watching a lot of the American Zoetrope stuff. I might have mentioned this last week. I can't remember if I did, so forgive me. But I've been watching like a documentary on that, and then just reading a lot of stuff about American Zoetrope and how Coppola, and it was really Coppola and Lucas that spearheaded that whole thing.
Yeah.
Like Coppola had the money and the experience and the kind of the clout. And then George was the one they all revered. They all loved, they all looked at George Lucas like he was the leader of that, but they were all super anti-establishment because it was the transition from old Hollywood to, I guess you can call it New Hollywood at the time, where,
yeah,
you know, they were more independent, more edgier, more thinking outside the box kind of group. And so George Lucas probably did hate all the older critics at that time because they were like still wanting their, you know, fucking Doris Day bullshit. And he's like, no, go watch Easy Rider and then shut the fuck up and then come back and talk to me. So, yeah, it probably was a little bit of jab, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the funny thing too, when you think about it, like George, it's like, he's like one of the guys who starts that new Hollywood thing, but he's also the guy that also ends it too at the same time. Not like of his own. He does his own thing technically, but just the way like he shifts it into the 80s pretty much with Star Wars. It's like him and Steven Spielberg are the ones that shifted into that next stage, mm-hmm. you know, but at the same time, like George Lucas is like, he's like the total like auteur that like starts in like the late 60s and like is revered as like almost like the top tier filmmaker of that late 60s era with like all his like shorts and so on.
Mm-hmm. He's the art guy. He's the anti-establishment guy. He's like, make it for love and whatever. And then that Kenner deal happens and it's like, hold the fuck on. I mean, and it does change. Like it, you also kind of like at a certain point though, you create this company to do things like industrial light and magic, and you have no idea that it's going to take off like it does. So now you have a responsibility to make money.
Yep, because you have all these people working for you and so on, you know. Yeah. But
so there's a lot of that to it too. I mean, it's not just him getting greedy. It's you know, I don't know, but it's a little sidebar about George Lucas. But yeah, critics. I mean, they kind of do suck.
Yeah, I'm always been kind of generally anti like regular critics. Like if that's your job, that almost seems kind of like, I don't know. Like I feel like I rather trust the people. Like that mm-hmm. that's where I feel like I get this hammer and sickle. I feel like I trust the people when it comes to the critical reviews. You know, I want to hear it from the guy on the street, not somebody, you know, up in a tower.
So we're like nobodies right now. And we review movies. So when do we become the critics? Like when does it shift? Like at what point are they're just regular guys talking about movies? At what point is it that it changes? I wonder.
Yeah, that's the thing though. It's like, do you even notice? You know what I mean? Like
we don't,
you know, like does the change just happens, and you know,
yeah,
you know. And granted, like I will say, I like someone like Leonard Maltin, like, you know,
oh yeah,
you know, he's the critic that, even though he does kind of shit on a handful of movies that I kind of go, huh, that's interesting. But like overall, I like Leonard Maltin, you know, mm-hmm. and like, so there is people out there that are kind of interesting. And I'm not saying that like all critics are in that kind of sense, but sometimes there is that thing that it's that old fashioned that like, it's, you know, if you're going to critique on something, you've almost got to be in the trenches first and foremost. But then that mm-hmm. almost makes it hard. Once you're in the trenches and you've actually worked on stuff, it's kind of hard for you now to be judgy of somebody else's stuff. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's that kind of, you know, mentality.
Well, it's like I've been listening to, when I had to make a trip earlier this week and drive a lot. And I was listening to the Joe Rogan interview with Quentin Tarantino. Then I went to the Two Bears, One Cave interview.
That's a good one too.
Yeah, I didn't get to finish that one yet, but Tom Segura was talking to him. But one thing about him in both those interviews, he shits so hard on 80s movies.
Oh yeah, Tarantino hates the 80s so much.
And I agree with his reasoning, but I don't agree that the 80s sucked. I think the 80s were fucking awesome.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is I love 70s movie making, and I get it, because the 70s like that's the most freest time period of any movie history of ever. Like you'll never get movies that are like, literally you can pretty much make whatever you want in the 70s. That's what makes mm-hmm. the 70s such an interesting decade, you know. And once the 80s come, you get to the blockbuster kind of decade where it becomes more of a studio system again and producers have more power and things like that. But they still turn out, like, I personally actually like producer-driven movies like that as well, too. That can be just as good, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah, I mean, 90s and 70s are, in terms of real art form, the best. But I'm a sucker for those garbage-ass 80s movies. Give me Back to the Future all day. I love it.
Yeah.
My favorite movie always will be. And, yeah, that's it. The last thing I'll say, Rocky really is the movie that... Jaws brings back the blockbuster. Mm-hmm. Star Wars brings in the newest special effects and changes the whole world for that. And then Rocky was the first one. It was like, hey, all the, you know, all the villains, you know, they're winning and every movie's sad and cynical and stuff. I want the hero to win. And that's the first one where it starts really changing.
Yeah, and it's all right there. The same, it's pretty much in like the same year almost. All those, all three of those just to go pop, 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 pop.
75, 76, 77, those three years change a lot. And we were talking about critics, and then now we're talking about movies. But
You know what it all leads to? Because old Indy at the very end, the one the critics like, you know what? You were right, old Indy. Like, I had to give it a chance and it's actually good. And old Indy stands up and goes, what are you talking about? These kids were shit. You know, I hope they all die in the street tomorrow. And I was like, what? Like, old Indy's just like, he's like, you know what? They're like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. I'm gonna go write a review on it and tell them how bad they are.
Oh, gosh, old Indy. And again, the thing that makes old Indy the worst is it's nothing like what you would think old Indy would be. What you think old Indy would be is literally Harrison Ford now, grumpy as fuck. You know, short, like vague answers, still somehow poignant, but like, you know, just very get off my lawn. And yeah.
Yeah. Well, I picture old Indy literally to be like Harrison Ford, literally living out like in the middle of Australia, as far away from like civilization as possible, like almost like kind of unforgiving Clint Eastwood. Like I picture something like that. Like he really doesn't want anything left to do with the world. I feel like that's more, if you want Harrison Ford, old Indy, that's what I picture more than anything else. Like he's not really talking to people anymore or anything like that.
He's he moves to, away from society to a uncharted island with a, you know, non-contacted, you know, tribe there, that's never seen white men before. And he becomes their god. And he has a bunch of concubines
on this desert island. And he's like sitting on the throne, like King Conan. Just shirtless, but with the Indiana Jones hat on still.
Yeah.
And just the camera slowly pans back and there's all these people like fanning him and standing around him, and it just looks like some like Frank Frazetta like painting.
Yeah. Every time they start getting out of hand and you think a mutiny's on board, he just hounds up this crystal skull and they're like, oh shit. All over. That's old Indy.
Yeah, you know, that's what I saw a picture where this old Indy's just going around just extending everybody's day by an extra 45 minutes. So, you know, once old Indy leaves there and we see what happens to Indy is Indy and his escapades of the three women starting to get dicey there. And as this play's going on, they're giving him more jobs all the time because the stage director is an alcoholic. And then there's literally like this like Scapelli mob. That's probably a real life thing, but all I could think of was the Mario Brothers movie when I was watching it, even before the Mario Brothers. Like there's a Scapelli, like, you know, other like Broadway thing that you never see them, but they're always doing dastardly acts. They're stealing talent. They're breaking down equipment. You know, they get the stage director drunk, like whatever it is, like they're threatening this play to like, no, you know, no end. They pay off the critics. Even like Ann Hirsch's or whatever, like art, like critic, you know, people. It's like when Indy goes there, he's like, yo, you guys got paid off, are you gonna take it? It's like, well, the money's right, like like what kind of dignity do these guys have? These guys are so-called artists and so on like that. They're like, oh, I don't care, yeah, you give me some extra cash, sure, I'll write a bad review on that one.
Yeah, it's all a racket. And Indy's there trying to, he ends up having to direct. And everything goes to shit. There's a monkey there for some reason.
that they just let loose. Like the monkey, like it never has, the chimpanzee literally never has like a point in this thing. He's just there to cause mischief for India.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the monkey is kind of stupid. I'm not gonna lie. The monkey thing was the worst part of this episode. Other than old Indy stuff. But it yeah, there's this monkey like causing all this trouble and everything's going crazy. And of course, you know what's gonna happen. All when the night of the play, when it finally debuts, all three women are there, one to be a critic, one who's actually performing in the play, and then the you know, other socialite girl goes because her daddy bankrolled the whole thing, so she's gotta be there opening night. That's the thing to do. And so after the movie's over, they're all trying to get with Indy, get their 10 seconds, and he's bouncing around. And the one thing that happens is throughout the movie, throughout the whole thing, that he ends up with accidentally giving each one of these girls an artifact from the other girl.
Yeah.
Or like some hint that, you know, so he's, yeah.
I love how Indy's just the biggest re-gifter.
Yeah.
Because he gets this, like, he gets these, like, heirlooms from these girls. They're like, you know, this is what my great grandma gave me, this, like, handkerchief, or, like, this, like, watch here, and so on. And then he, like, literally, like, the next girl will be there, be like, oh, you know, I'm always late. Well, here you go. I got a watch.
Yeah, he's regifting the gifts from them. He's like, he went one point, he gets roses from the girl and he gives it to the other girl. And then, like, he steals a line from Anhaisha's character. And then this other girl, the socialite girl, gets engraved on, like, her makeup thing or something. And that's so they all end up in the powder room at the same time. They see these artifacts. Like, I gave that to Indy. I gave that to Indy. And they all realize, oh, shit, we're all getting played. And it's Indy's birthday, and they shove his face in a cake.
It kind of, I will say, like, the whole build up to it is great, because it's like, you know, Indy's really being forced to, like, work extra hard, like, on that play and get that going. Like, and I feel like that buildup in there is kind of interesting, because everything that could, you know, go wrong does go wrong on that. And he's trying to make the opening night right, and he's doing it well and everything like that. And, it, you know, this is the thing that's going to change musicals and so on. They just, no one knows it yet. But then once it gets to that ending, and it's just like, okay, there's that. And then it literally has, like, almost like a, like, I don't know, just like a slapsticky kind of, like, ending where all the girls just team together and shove Indy's, like, face in there. Like, I really picture that not all those girls, like, some of those girls would have been like, no, we're not going to all join forces. Like, especially like the socialite kind of lady. Like, I feel that lady would have been like, no, that's okay. I'll get rid of these other two and I could still have Indy. Like, I feel like them all sort of just joining forces and be like, you know what, screw this guy. Like, that felt like a little bit like, I don't know. I could see that for a couple of them, but maybe not all of them.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like she would have just kind of, like, tried to dethrone him, because she was just, like, all over Indy. But I will say one thing. Everybody's situation turns out better, all those girls.
Yeah.
Like, she gets to write her view in, hey, so I guess that helps. And then we follow along with this, because we forget characters' names. We just talk about the actor or the person that looks like an actor, another actor. And then the redhead keeps, she gets her job. Like, she does the final act. She didn't expect to do it. And then she brings the house down, and she gets standing ovation. And the socialite wins out because her dad bankrolled the play, and this obvious hit. So it's going to make them more money. So everybody wins.
Yeah, everybody wins. And Indy sort of gets off kind of scot-free in a sense. Yeah, get a little bit of cake in your face, but hey, you had a good time.
He had a good time.
Like, if getting a little bit of cake in your face is the worst thing that happens for that situation, like, Indy got off probably lighter than any man in history that's ever done.
Yeah, he basically had, like, a few weeks of, you know, Thanksgiving and also lived in a brothel.
He literally got the equivalent of just, like, the slap on a wrist.
Like, yeah. See, and he missed out, because I know Ann Hage did some things that he didn't even hear of in the 20s. He didn't even know that existed. And he's like, oh, yeah. He messed up. He messed up. But, you know, there's that. So, yeah, Indiana Jones, Sex in the City, or it's really called... what is it called?
Scandal of the 1920.
I could not think of the word scandal. but yeah, Scandal of 1920. So you can go watch that. This is one of those ones that you could watch as the movie, I think. If you want to watch the old indie stuff, you can go on YouTube, but I think it actually would be better to watch it as the combined thing.
Yeah.
Because really you didn't need old indie for the second one. They could have just said to be continued and picked up.
But I will say the old indie from the first part, though, is one of the, I think, the top tier old indie moments.
Yeah, it's definitely. We're going to, I think we should go back and watch those and rank them, because they're just great. I still go back to the one where, like, the girl gets shot and there's the MAGA guy back in 1992. That one's funny.
That was a great one. The classic, the post office lady one's a good one, too. It's simple, but just...
She gets stuck there for 45 minutes. She's got like a real schedule, and he gets her stuck there. Old indies, just if you go watch, just go watch a few of the old indies so you know what we're talking about. Just watch a few of those.
No, the old indies, so good. And I guess speaking of indie, we get to our, you know, indie goes from, you know, banging the three ladies at the same time, or not the same time technically, but you know. Mm-hmm. you know, it all together. And then we go into real young Indy, the boy Indy, kid Indy, and then we get where Indy discovers love.
Yeah, he's simping hard in this one. It's all about the hoes, these three episodes. It's
yeah.
So he goes to you're gonna have to help me out with this. Because this one I could not pay attention to the way I wanted to, but there was so much going on. But he's Vienna, Austria, 1908. Mm-hmm. He's there with his mom and his dad. And his dad, I guess, is just going around talking about smart people shit in Austria.
Yeah, his dad's a sort of smart person, like, convention.
Yeah, that's all he does.
That's all he's a guy, he's almost like the father who's always just busy doing his own thing. And he just kind of happens to drag Indy along with him, like, to work. Mm-hmm.
Listen, I have another TED Talk today. You need to shut the fuck up. Yeah.
I guess quickly to start with, we got old Indy at the beginning, and for some reason, he like checks himself into a psychiatrist because he thinks that his grandchildren are like insane and don't believe him on any of this stuff. And he checks himself in to prove that he's totally sane by telling this lady all these like name drop people he's hanging out with in 1908.
It was pretty funny because first of all, it was very Trumpy, because remember how Trump like had that like cognitive test taken? He's like person, hat, yeah. TV. So it's like, I'm going to prove to you guys I'm like not, you know, losing my shit. So he does the same thing. His kids, which he talks about kids. We saw his grandkids.
Yeah.
And you don't see Marion Ravenwood, I don't think. So, I mean, it doesn't cause any canonical issues. So you just, I guess, watching Crystal Skull go back and assume it's her.
Yeah.
And I guess these are Mutt's kids.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah. I never really thought about that. The Shia LaBeouf's kids.
Yeah. It's either that or Indy just has all these other random children that have just been sprawled across.
Which is possible.
Just one of those ones. He just reconnected with them when he was 96.
Yeah, come on. Like, we just watched an episode where we know that's possible.
It's not out of the question at all.
That was foreshadowing a more coming up soon. But yeah, so Indy's talks to the psychiatrist, and he brings up Sigmund Freud because he wants to get tested to prove to his kids I could take care of myself. Okay, just because I had this cat incident in a tree, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And so she's like, yeah, okay, let's talk. And he brings up Sigmund Freud, and she writes delusions on the pad. And then he's got a name drop like really hard, and be like, no, I know Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung and all them. Let me tell you about it.
Huh. Yeah, here's the thing. You know what? I know you charge by the hour, but I got 45 minutes to tell you my story.
She seems interested. So yeah, he goes to Vienna, Austria, 1908. Franz Ferdinand still doing his thing. He meets his daughter.
Yeah, at horse riding camp.
Yeah. She drops her hat and he picks it up, and they're like, none of this Wild West shit here. He's like, I'm American. Go fuck off. Eat a dick.
Yeah, they do a lot of like America racism in this like episode, because there's a lot of stuff like, even when Franz Ferdinand's like, he's like, you know, it's I know that you like my daughter, but here's the thing, I would never ever in a thousand years let a dirty American boy touch but his, you know, filthy freedom loving hands over her.
Yeah.
It's like, go back to your giant, you know, country.
And then a few years later, World War One, dear people, not him. He's not around. He's the one that gets shot, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
He's the one that causes all the confusion, in a sense.
Yeah. And Indy almost sets up. Okay. This was the most reaching situation. This one was a reach, because basically Indy almost sets up a diplomat, like a real, like, international situation by crushing on Franz Ferdinand's daughter, pretty much.
Yeah, you know, and he really does, and it's just for this. And he's like, it sounds weird, but like, this is like the proto Anakin and Padme relationship, it feels like, right here. When I saw this episode, I'm like, holy crap, this is like seeing like the first draft of like episode one.
And it's
for that part.
is somehow less cringy than that. And also, Shmi Skywalker's in this episode.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah, just Shmi's in there. She plays the Emil lady or something. So yeah, you got Shmi Skywalker and then baby Anakin. And then, yeah, at least they're the same age.
Yeah, no, yeah, they pretty much are. Even though she seems slightly, for some reason, she has that feeling like she seems slightly older, maybe because she's like taller than him and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So that's like the, like what kind of feels sort of like it, but that's what it sort of feels like. There's this princess and then here's this, you know, American boy, you know, he's mm-hmm. kind of like that Anakin where he just feels like out of his league.
Yeah, yeah, he is out of his league and he's simping hard for this girl. And he basically, he brings her onto the ice skate when he's not supposed to. And like everybody freaks the fuck out about it.
Yeah, like her handler or whatever comes by. She's like, oh, that dirty American took my, you know, whatever I was supposed to be taking care of. Like, you know, I don't know what she's like, the nanny or what have you. Like, you can't take the princess out on the ice. Blah, 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 blah. Just making the biggest scene. And like literally everybody's like, does the turn look like, huh. American mm-hmm. boy, I don't trust him. And then like they all like spread out and he's just standing out there on the ice like, what'd I do?
Yeah, he's just 8 years old, like trying to make a friend. And everybody's like, you almost caused a war, right? Like, how do you handle that? That's probably why he has lady issues later and he can't, you know, he doesn't want to fall in love because he almost caused a war. So yeah, so Indy is not the same person he is when he turns 21. He has met one girl, he's in love with her, and he's gonna do every goddamn thing possible, including break into the palace to just tell this girl bye, like blow her a kiss or something.
Well, first he breaks into the palace and he goes up to Franz Ferdinand and says like, I'd like to marry your daughter, sir.
This episode is really stupid, isn't it?
It's kind of, I'll say it, like, I still enjoyed it, but this one is kind of goofy. But because, yeah, you know, the whole point is it's like, yeah, it's Indy discovers love and the feeling inside, you know? And even the part where, like, you know, there's a part where, like, you know, Sean Connery's all like telling Indy, he's like, okay, you know, the boy needs to go get educated. And they're like, let's take him in to go meet all these, you know, philosophers and psychologists. It's going to be good for him, you know? Mm-hmm. And then whatever, I can't remember what Indy's mom's name is. I want to say Martha.
Anne.
The boy needs to learn from the best. Come on, let's take him to dinner. You know?
He's going to meet Sigmund Freud, played by Max von Sydow, which was cool.
Yeah, no, that part actually is kind of funny because then, like, when Indy's there, he's like, Mr. Freud, like, I feel love. And he's like, goes off this, like, explaining. And like, these old men are like, oh, it's your child love. That's interesting. Yes, yes. I gotta see it's different here. And then, like, each one has their different, like, opinion on love. Well, let me tell you what the 1500s said about love here. And then Sigmund Freud's like, pretty much like, in simple terms, like, yeah, you know what? It's a sexual urge. The boy's got a bang. Just, you know, like, he's got all his pent-up rage. It's the damn mom over here who's keeping it from doing it, you know? Like, you mm-hmm. get this, don't you, Henry?
Yeah. Yeah, they're basically like, Sigmund Freud basically tells Indy, listen, man, like, you know what I'm saying? You got to keep that pimp hand strong and don't let them get in your way. You know what I'm saying? You got this. They put a wall, you go over that wall. And you go in that palace and you tell that bitch, say, listen, I'm yours and you're mine. That's it. And that's basically what Indy, he is not swayed by the fact that he almost got them assassinated, apparently, by ice skating. No, he's going to go in there. And the sneaking around the palace was very Indy and very cool.
Yeah, I like the sneaking part. I think that's definitely because it's a nice long scene. Like, it really makes it feel like that castle super long because of how long like Indy has to sneak through so many different rooms mm-hmm. to finally get there. But I've been like going back to that Sigmund Freud scene. There's even the part where like he literally does the thing where he's like, okay, now let's get the skirts out of the room real quick. We have a man-to-man talk. Mm-hmm. And he's just pretty much telling Indy like, okay, remember, no means yes. Don't you dare stop. Let that primal urge go.
Did she consent? Because if she did, yeah, it's the world, but conceptually very weird. It's not a bad episode in terms of just, you know, how it's pulled off or made. It's just conceptually like, And you know what's even weirder? If you go to Wikipedia, and I read this other places too, so it's backed up. It's not just Wikipedia. There's a list of unproduced episodes.
Yeah, because I know there's like, in a sense, there's like a whole, like, in a sense, like almost felt like there was supposed to be a third real season.
Yeah. And you read some of those unproduced episodes, like, I would much rather had that shit than any of this Young Andy shit. Like, he goes to Australia, he goes to South America. At one point, he like ends up in the the jungle with Percy Fawcett. Like, that is a cool one.
You know, well, it's probably that thing that, like, you know, George was probably spreading them out. You know what I mean? And, and it's kind of weird that, like, if George Lucas wanted to make an Indy 3, you know, season 3, there's no real kind of reason why he couldn't. I mean, when you're the most powerful filmmaker ever, you know, especially at the time. But it is that thing that, yeah, it's kind of a bummer when there is just those extra episodes. You're like, man, that would be kind of cool if, like, you know, they were done and you could actually see some more of that kind of stuff. Because, yeah, the kid Indy is kind of a, like, I feel like Young Indiana Jones Chronicles could literally be just like teenage boy Indy, or like that kind of Indy, you know, and that would be fine. That should be almost what the whole show was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I still have this inkling, and I don't know how I feel about this, by the way. I'm not saying this is a good thing or a bad thing. I still have this inkling that this is going to be what is done with Indy on Disney Plus, because they did already plan a series and they just canceled it. And I don't know if they'll redo this series or they'll just do a whole new thing, but I would like to see them, like, with hindsight, say, okay, this is the stuff that worked, this is the stuff that didn't work, and if I trusted Disney to do it right, which I fucking don't, then I would like to see them, like, say, hey, let's do the Percy Fawcett thing and let's do some of these other ones. Like, at one point he's doing like dog sledding in Alaska and that doesn't get made. And again, like you said, it was probably a third season stuff, but damn, looking in retrospect, I kind of would like to see some of that than what we got. But, you know,
well, it's one of those ones, I know this kind of goes back to our first episode of it, but I always kind of wonder if having that kid episode as your very start episode kind of affected the show. You know, because if there's a lot of people that they're only going to watch one episode, you know what I mean, and they're either in or they're out, and I kind of wonder if the kid thing sort of threw people off. If you would have started right off from teenage Indy, even though I guess was the first episode like a
it was have, both.
Okay, I guess it did have both of it. Never mind. I was thinking for some reason, but I forgot that was an hour and a half episode. Mm-hmm. But even still, the kid part still comes first. I do kind of feel like if it was the other way around, where you started with teen Indy, I think that almost, like, you know, start on the strong foot in a sense.
Mm-hmm. I think what would have been really cool is to kind of recreate for TV a character introduction for young Indy, kind of similar to the way they did in Raiders of Lost Ark. Because that intro to Raiders of Lost Ark is one of the best character introductions ever.
Yeah, so dialed in.
Yeah, so dialed in. And you're probably not going to get that quality on TV, but something like that where it's just Indy, you don't know what's going on, and you unravel the story as you're introducing this character. And then maybe bounce back to George Hall talking the shit to 90s kids in the museum and maybe give young Indy somewhere. But you definitely see some of the ideas that George has for the prequel starting to really sneak up here. It's a real, I mean, like I said, you even have Shmi Skywalker in that, the Vienna episode, like she's even there. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it's funny because it's like the whole team that generally is making these young Indiana Jones ones of George is like, that's the core team of the prequels.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's like where it all kind of comes together with this, you know? And yeah, as I said, it's just funny how this episode does just have that very, I felt some very like testing episode one things here with, you know, Indy finding love and literally breaking into the castle just to like say goodbye. And, you know, she gives him the locket. And he gives her like the little snow globe thing of ice skating to remind her of getting yelled at.
Yeah. I think if the prequels would have been made in like 94, 95, that kid would have been Anakin.
I really do too. Like, it's one of those ones. It feels like it literally, I literally could have seen, what's his name? Regular Indiana Jones or regular young Indy. I could have seen him actually being Anakin in episode 2. I'm like on his name right now.
You talking about River Phoenix?
No, not well. I can maybe see that too, I guess. But I was almost literally picturing what's his name, Boondock Saints, and young Indiana Jones here.
Oh, yeah, Sean Patrick Flannery.
Yeah, Sean Patrick Flannery. I really feel like he almost could have been like, you know, Anakin's older version. Like if these were kind of made in the time period. I hate to sort of say it, even though I like the prequel movies as they are, but I felt like they would have been nice if they were like almost earlier than even later, because they would have matched even more to you know, episodes, you know, 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah. Hindsight's 2020, because I think if we could all go back in time, there'd be no kid Anakin, and we just all cast Heath Ledger as Anakin.
Yeah, you just start off as I start off with. I know it's like the easy like armchair directing, but I feel like just Anakin should just be a little bit older and a little bit more punkier. I think that's what he just needs to be, a rebel kind of like thing. I think that's what you need. You need somebody who feels like Qui-Gon feels like, I know he's kind of a bad kid, but I can fix him, like almost a Jason Todd from Batman, if you want to have a Batman reference. And then it's like, oh no, he broke.
Now we're all broke.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Yeah.
It's interesting to see what's going on here and what could have, you know, should have been. You know, he offered that to Leo, and I have a feeling he probably offered this to Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah,
because I could definitely. He's got the same hair thing going on. You know, I mean that's a '90s thing too. But I love Sean Patrick Flannery in this.
I do too. He's amazing. That's what I mean. Is like he's the one that like that's what the show should be like 100%. It's just his show.
Yeah, some of the different directing styles get in there, and he doesn't sync with it as well. But you start to see some indie stuff pop in there. He's a good representative of a young indie, as about as well as you could get. So I don't know. The end episode was definitely not one of my favorites. I don't think we'll ever enjoy the kid episodes as much as the adult episodes. I did like the Teddy Roosevelt one, even though they had some weird moments in it, but I mean, it looks like we're going to be getting old indie for quite a while. I didn't see any young indie ones.
I think there's only like one or two more kid indie ones,
and he looks older. When I've seen bits and pieces of it, he looks like he's aged, you know, a couple years almost.
So those also might be, maybe we don't get kid indie till we get to the final movies type thing.
Yeah, the way I'm looking at it here, I do see one in Peking, March 1910. That looks like a kid movie.
Yeah, well, and then there looks like there's a couple 1910s.
Yeah.
So
there's two at least right here. And then this Paris, October 1916, that's going to be still old indie. That one has Ian McDiarmid in it.
Yeah, so there'll be a few of them, but... It's the thing too about the kid indie ones. They're never bad. They're still decent episodes. It's just you got to kind of get into a little bit different mindset when you go with it. And as I said, the young indie or the kid indie definitely has the Anakin like style of acting of like everything's whimsical and he's just there to ask questions and he's just a little blonde haired boy running around like you know, like that kind of thing.
I will say we praise this show because it's not just archaeological adventure every single week and, you know, just, you know, shoehorning that in there. Here's the MacGuffin. And I do appreciate they're looking at Andy's life, but, and I want it to stay that way. I want there to be a lot of that in the show, but I think it needs to be broken up just a little bit with some cool archaeology shit and some stuff. I get a little fatigued every once in a while with just this. I would like to see it broken up a little bit more. But I don't dislike this stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because we actually haven't had an archaeology episode in a while. These last handful of them have been like, you know, Indy learns the blues, Indy's jazz, he's, you know, banging three girls at once, you know.
He
finds love, you know, like...
The last four have been really about love.
He's got the weird dancing play thing where the guy like sells him on because of his legs, tries to de-pants him in front of everybody.
That was the dumbest thing, where he's doing the pelvic thrust to like try to shine a light on something. That was the dumbest thing.
Yeah.
This show is not perfect. I still think it's really good though. I'm having fun with it. So we still got a lot more left. We got three knocked out tonight.
Yeah, we're gonna try to keep that triple threat, just like Indy. We're gonna keep three going at the same time.
Yeah, it's difficult.
It's going to be a challenge, but we're going to see how long we can run with it.
Yeah, you know, the ladies' man, you know, he knows what he does. You know, if you in the 1920s and some hoes, a prohibition hoes, and it's got you covered. So there's that. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. I do need some archaeology shit. Like, here's Florence, Paris, Istanbul, Prague, Palestine. That one's got Catherine Zeta-Jones in it. Excited for that one. And then it looks like it ends with Dracula. So yeah,
the old Transylvania, Indiana Jones. I'm actually almost very interested to see where that goes. I know it's going to be like a Scooby-Doo episode where probably it's going to feel like there's a monster. And then at some point, he's going to like demask it. And he's like, I would have got away with it too if it wasn't for your damn Indiana Jones kid.
Yeah, he's just like, they're sitting around. Some shit happens. He said, there's murders. You think it could be the blood-sucking guy? No, it's not him, and then it's not.
Yeah.
He's like, I just suck blood. Eh?
It'll probably feel like a Scooby-Doo movies one where like Scooby-Doo meets some celebrity guest. But, you know. Yeah.
What if Kiss shows up? Oh, man. Whatever. It's ridiculous stuff. I'm having fun with it, though. It's still really, really good. But
it would almost be like, I guess that could happen of old Indy.
Yeah.
Just it's, old Indy for some reason ends up at a Kiss concert.
And he's like friends with Kiss. He's like, let me tell you when we were back in the New York groove in 1970. Oh man. He's got Kiss face paint on. That would be hilarious.
Yeah, one of those ones. Oh,
yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. We'll see what happens. Again, we laugh and have fun with this stuff, but that's just because that's what we do. But we're still enjoying it. I just want that to be clear. We think this show is amazing. I'm glad we're watching it. There's some silly stuff in it, but some of that's just network TV shit from the 90s. You know, it's like Quantum Leap and stuff like that. I love that stuff, but it was also goofy as hell sometimes, like the one where he's retarded. Have you ever seen that?
I don't know if I've ever seen that one. I've really only seen that show like once or twice.
There's one where, you know, because he always discovers who he actually is in the time the time machine when he looks in the mirror and he realizes, oh, I don't see Scott Bakula. I see whoever this person is. I'm John F. Kennedy. Uh-huh. And this one, he turns around and he looks in the mirror and goes, I'm retarded. It's just so insensitive.
But at the time, there was probably, they thought like, hey, you know, it's okay. You know, we're addressing the issue.
Yeah. Well, I saw a t-shirt the other day. It was swing. We're not swing for the retarded. It was like a golf.
See, but at the time, like somebody, like when someone put that t-shirt together, they were literally doing it like, you know, we're doing the right thing. If we swing for the retards, you know, we don't have to see them in like, you know, regular society anymore. That's what this money's going to, right?
Oh my god, this show went off the rails. Oh my gosh,
it'd be like an old indie moment where some old guy on the golf course is all like, well, let me tell you, when I put up funding once, it was in the 1940s to put up concentration camps for the Japanese. You're like, Jesus, what are you doing, old man? You're like, yeah, that's what I do. I put together charity events to get people off my town.
Yeah, that would be why this old Indy's just, he's got some issues. And they still haven't addressed the eye. They still haven't addressed the eye patch thing.
No.
Anyway.
No, nobody ever brings it up either, like a conversation either. They don't just go, hey, you know, by the way, you know, is it weird that he has, you know, glasses on over the eye patch thing and that doesn't just have a monocle?
Yeah.
I don't know who's wearing a monocle in 1992, but.
Yeah. I feel like they just need to kill Indy off in the 60s, honestly. Like, I don't know. It's whatever. But anyway, y'all watch the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles on YouTube. Go to Young Indie Restored. That's where we're using to watch all of this cool shit. And it's in chronological order. And you can watch it just, you can pretend you're in the 90s, the early 90s, Clinton's president. You know, that stuff's going on. He's got three women at the same time too, you know, all that stuff going on. And, you know, old Slick Willie and, you know, budgets balanced. We're reaching across the aisles, reaching under the desk and, you know, just take, transport yourself back and enjoy this with us. So any last thoughts before we get out of here on this Young Indiana Jones retrospective?
No, I think, you know, as I said, I did enjoy these last three ones. I mean, I always enjoy all of them, but it's fun stuff. I had a good laugh. The whole idea of, you know, Indy just kind of pimping himself around here and becoming the ladies' man who just can't say no. You know, that's who Indy is. It's weird because he does it in such like, he does it like in the nicest way that like, you know, it's the most undouchy way of trying to date three women at the same time.
Yeah. Cause a lot of this stuff just happens because he feels bad and he's, you know, he's like, I love all of you guys. So he wants, you know, wants to keep them all, but alas, but yeah,
he's like Mr. Nice Guy. That's just who he wants to be.
Yeah, he wants to be, but he's Chad. He doesn't want to be Chad, but he's Chad. He's like cool, smart archaeology Chad.
Yeah,
but he's still Chad.
He still is.
He's Indy. Like that's what you want. Mm-hmm. All right, you want some beta Indy? No, you want some Indy like getting all the knickers, all of them, and back in the 1920s. So. Anyway, yeah, thanks for listening to the Young Indiana Jones retrospective. I had fun. Spitzer, have fun. If you go to Via VHS on Twitter, at Via VHS, you can yell at me there. You can yell at me on Instagram, at Via VHS Pod, and I might be doing some TikTok stuff soon. So, anyway, thanks for listening. Y'all have a good one, and Young Indy is out.